Okay, hello, and welcome to episode 8 of The Drop Set. I'm your host, Darren Starr, coach, trainer, owner, five-star physique. It's been a little while, so we got off to a good start with these podcast episodes. I did 7 of them, knocked them out. It was pretty much weekly for a while there, and then some things happened. So it started off, I skipped a week due to a scheduling thing, and then I got sick, and then I kind of slacked off and deprioritized stuff, so here we are. It's been almost a month, but we are back finally. So, speaking of what's new, so, you know, I start these podcasts here. I can actually show you. I should also clarify, for those listening to this, I'm also broadcasting this live on Facebook as I record it. So you can look at my stupid face as I sit here and stammer my way through this thing. So, for the Facebook live audience, I'm going to turn this around and show this is my iPad so you can see my outline that I have here. So I kind of follow a template on these things because there's a lot of, you know, recurring segments on this podcast. So the first thing I have is what's new, and under that my bullet points are sick, slacking, and the last one is social media overhaul. So recently, let me pull back the curtain for you a little bit. I hired a social media consultant to help me, like, you know, improve the content that I put out on Facebook, on Instagram, on my website. So I've been spending a lot of time behind the scenes working on that, trying to get some better content going, etc. So you can look for further changes there. Other stuff that's coming would be there's going to be a redesign of the website fairly soon. And there's going to be some additional content up there as well. And I will not spoil that just yet. But there'll be some stuff. There'll be some free stuff. And there'll be some stuff available for purchase as well. So lots of stuff changing. So that's what's new. What else is new? My band had a gig on Friday again. We continue to rehearse and play regularly, so that's always fun. Other than that, everything's good. I was sick for a good solid week. I had the man cold, so, you know, it's everyone around me felt like they thought I was going to die with how dramatic I was being. That's pretty much par for the course, but I'm over it now, so thank goodness. I wanted to jump straight in and tackle a little Q&A. The agenda for the podcast this week, when I've done these before, we've always tackled, like, two primary topics. There's just one for this week, and it's a biggie, and it is the fundamental of bodybuilding, and it is hypertrophy. That's all we're talking about today is hypertrophy, so muscle growth, specifically on the output side of things. Like, how do we train for hypertrophy? You know, there's certainly, nutritional aspects to consider as well. We're not going to get into that this week, just because the physical side of it is the impetus for everything else. So if you don't have the proper training stimulus, it doesn't matter how good your diet is, you aren't going to grow. So we're going to talk about what that means, how to create it, that kind of stuff. So the Q&A segment, though, I've got two questions here. I think this one may have been asked before, but I get asked this question so frequently that it's worth probably answering almost every week. And that is, when should I do my cardio? And the answer that I like to give people always is, the best time to do cardio is the time when you can ensure that you will get it done. Because otherwise, you know, if I say you've got to do it fasted in the morning and you just can't do it for whatever reason, I would challenge you on that. If you say you can't, I would say, I bet you can. It just might be, you know, might pull you out of your comfort zone a little bit, which would probably be a good thing. Or if I said, well, you've got to do it post-workout. Well, I've only got an hour to work out and, you know, I can't squeeze in an extra 30 minutes for cardio. You know, the best time to do it is when you can ensure that you actually get it done. Now, that being said, depending on the type of cardio, you know, for steady state cardio, I do always encourage people, if they have the ability to do it fasted, I do find it to be a little bit more effective for most people in a fasted state. As the intensity of that goes up, like if we're talking about sprint intervals, I find it less productive to do that fasted for several reasons. The most logical of which is just, you know, you can't push the intensity that really makes sprint interval cardio worth it if you don't have anything in your system and you just woke up and you're still groggy. Now, the corollary to that is with your cardio, don't sleepwalk your way through it, even if it's steady state. You know, people say low intensity, steady state cardio, and that's valid. I mean, that's a valid thing, but I think people have different ideas of what low intensity means. Like, you know, they think of Ronnie Coleman walking on a treadmill at 3 miles per hour and say low intensity. Yeah, that's low intensity. You're also not Ronnie Coleman, so don't do that shit. You know, if you're going to do cardio, make it worth your time. You know, put some effort into it. If you find yourself just totally slacking in a zombie mode, sleepwalking your way through it, it's not effective. Even if you're going for low intensity, you've got to get your heart rate up a little bit. I mean, that's what cardio is. So, a lot of people will find themselves in a situation where they're trying to do fasted cardio and, you know, they just kind of really, really slog their way through it with minimal intensity. And at that point, I'd say, you know what, we need to change that intensity, or you need to do it later in the day because it's not effective. It's not as effective as we want it to be, at least. The other question is one that I get a lot, and it's concerning intermittent fasting. This came up in a conversation that I had with a potential client yesterday, which was it was a good conversation. And intermittent fasting is something that she's been doing for years. And so my take on it with her was a little bit different. So if somebody is not currently doing it and they ask for my take on it, then I will say, don't worry about it. You know what? It's more trouble than it's worth. I've tried it. I don't particularly care for it. I hate the way it makes me feel. I like to eat. I like to eat regularly throughout the day. Some people think of intermittent fasting as a way to think less about food. That was not the case for me. I thought more about it. I did not embrace the fasting portion of it whatsoever. So it's a little bit different for everybody. You know, if you're looking to hire a coach, and that's a coach that supports intermittent fasting, you know, be prepared for that. That's probably what you're going to be doing. If you hire somebody like me, it's not my favorite thing. So by default, you're probably not going to get a plan that covers intermittent fasting. So, but the case with her is she'd been doing it for many years and she said, well, I kind of like the way that this makes me feel. You know, my energy levels are better. My focus is better. I feel like it has a positive impact on my hormone levels. And so I said, good, you know what? I'm not going to upset the apple cart. You know, let's stick with a structure like that. It's doable. It's certainly a tenable option. It works. So since you've already gone through the introductory process into it, you know, if somebody's looking for me to sell them on intermittent fasting, it ain't gonna happen. That's a sales pitch I'm not gonna make. So, but if you've already done it, you've already sold yourself on it, there's no reason that something like that can't continue. I don't necessarily find it to be the most optimal setup just because I'm a big fan of consistent nutrient delivery throughout the day. I don't want necessarily, under ideal circumstances, a 16-hour window where you're not getting in any nutrients. So, That's the Q&A. So that's my take generally on intermittent fasting. So let's jump into the meat and potatoes of what we're going to talk about here today, which is hypertrophy. So when we talk about hypertrophy, we're talking about muscle growth. So when we talk about bodybuilding, that's what we're talking about specifically. So bodybuilding is the willful change in your body aesthetic, and building muscle is the hardest part of that. Absolutely. Stripping away body fat can be tough, but it's doable. It just takes some consistency. Building muscle is brutally hard work. You know, I talk to a lot of women and they're like, you know, I don't want to get too big. Don't worry, you won't. It doesn't happen by accident and it doesn't happen overnight. You know, you're not just going to stumble into 20 pounds of muscle. It doesn't happen that way. It is really, really hard work and it is a long-term process. So you've really got to sell yourself on the long game when it comes to hypertrophy. There's a lot of goals that you could have. If you're going to go to the gym and you're going to approach your workouts in a certain way, you know, hypertrophy is one goal. In bodybuilding, that's what we're dealing with. If you want to train for endurance, if you want to train for strength, which is very different from hypertrophy, strength and muscle growth are not the same thing. Strength is the ability to move large amounts of weight. That is not what we are concerned with if we're trying to build muscle. You could also just be trying to maintain. So all of those things have different approaches, different ways that you might go about structuring your program, structuring your diet if you were going to target one of those goals. So for hypertrophy, it's good to have a basis and an understanding of what the fundamentals are. So And we're talking about on the physical output side of things here. So when you're in the gym specifically, and I mentioned at the introduction, you know, there's obviously nutritional considerations as well. We're not talking about that today. We're just talking about the physical output side of things. It's the side of things that I find most people, or more people, struggle with the most. Just because I think everybody kind of has an idea of how they should be lifting. And generally speaking, I think most of those ideas are wrong or maybe not fully formed. And so I like to help open people's eyes to what it really means if you're going to train for hypertrophy and do it effectively. So the fundamentals that we're talking about here, there are, how many do I have in my outline here? Six, I think. So the first one being tension. You know, tension is the work that you can feel a muscle doing that causes it to grow. I hear my dog barking over there. Ugh, I knew this was going to happen when I went live. That was my biggest fear, is that, God forbid, the UPS truck comes or something and he's going to start losing his shit. So, all right, I'm going to pause the recording here. All right, I'm back. It is amateur hour over here at Podcast Central. I'd like to say that I'm going to go and edit all that out, but I probably won't. So, tension. So, tension is, you know, when you lift a weight and you do it properly, if you do it slowly, you're going to create tension in the muscle. That's how you know it's working, and you apply enough tension to it over a long enough period of time through full range of motion. You stress the muscle, that's what causes it to grow. So, another fundamental would be learning your anatomy. And I don't mean like being able to name all 206 bones. That's not helpful. I don't even care if you are able to name all of the muscles. I mean, you're going to know the big ones, the little ones, you know, I mean, it's less important to know what they are, but rather how they work and what they do. So one thing that I do like to teach people is about articulations. So articulations are movements in your body. So when you're doing a dumbbell curl, for example, you're doing bilateral elbow flexion. Well, if you're doing an easy bar curl, it's bilateral elbow flexion. So the angle at your elbow decreases. So, I mean, we know what a bicep curl looks like. That's flexion. If you're doing like a tricep exercise, a press down of some variety, that's elbow extension. A leg extension, obviously, is actually a knee extension. That's straightening of the knee. Knee flexion would be like a leg curl. Hip extension would be a Romanian deadlift, for example. Hip flexion would be the negative component of a squat along with knee flexion. So flexion, extension, abduction, adduction, all of those things, understanding what those articulations are and being able to visualize them and know what they're doing, really helpful, because then you can kind of use that as a focal point to emphasize the actual movement that you're doing and fine tune it a little bit. So you can correct a lot of really basic errors this way. So if you've ever seen somebody in the gym, I love to use, you know, curls as an example, because everybody knows what a curl is. People should know what proper form is on a curl, but based on my experience in the gym, a lot of people have no clue. So what you want, you know, if you fully straighten your elbow and then flex the elbow as much as you can, and then do that with your upper arm held tightly at your side, that is what a curl should look like. You see so many people, though, that perform it through a limited range of motion, and they're like rocking their shoulders back and forth. They're focusing on moving the weight as opposed to actually working the muscle and putting it through its full range of motion. That is where learning your anatomy and what these articulations are and how a specific exercise correlates to an articulation or combination of articulations, that's where it can be helpful. Another fundamental, mind-muscle connection. Without that, bodybuilding is just moving weights around. You know what? I mean, you've got to have that mind-muscle connection. This is one of the fundamental Weider principles from, you know, whenever the hell those were created, the 1970s, 60s, whatever. And it is impossible for me to overstate how important that is. Mind-muscle connection when it comes to bodybuilding is everything. And this is why I strongly encourage people, when they send me their progress photos, that we work on posing, because posing is nothing but the physical application of your mind-muscle connection and your body awareness. Things that are very easy to improve if you just put in the time to do it, but you don't get a lot of instant gratification from it. It's not a particularly rewarding experience in and of itself, but it's incredibly valuable. So mind-muscle connection. Can you flex your hamstrings as you stand there without bending your knee, like you're performing a curl? Can you just stand there and flex your hamstrings? If you can, that's a good sign that you have pretty good mind-muscle connection. If you can't, work on that and practice it until you can. It's just one of those things that you have to understand what the goal is. Like, okay, I'm trying to get my hamstring to jump, to create a little tension, to harden up, to ball up, but without actually bending my knee, without picking up my food. You can tell where my mind is. Without picking up my foot and bending my knee. Now, if we say flex the bicep, everybody knows what that looks like. Boom, there you go. Biceps for the guys. So that's easy. Now, can you isometrically flex your pecs without moving your hands? You know, if you've ever seen guys do the booby dance where they're bouncing their pecs back and forth, that's excellent mind-muscle connection. That's the kind of thing that, you know, you learn how to do that, and then suddenly trying to activate that particular muscle on an exercise becomes so much easier. That's the difference between, you know, let's stick with pecs as the example here. If you've got really good mind-muscle control over the pecs, that's the difference between performing a chest press or a pec fly or a dumbbell fly and feeling it kind of stress your shoulder joint versus actually having it work the pecs. So mind-muscle connection can really help with that. Another fundamental is typically we're going to use moderate weights. We're not trying to max out on everything. I always tell people that you know, we have a certain rep target that we have established for a specific exercise. We want to get full range of motion. We want to feel it. We want that mind-muscle connection. We want to be able to work in a little bit of an isometric squeeze. We want to be able to fatigue the muscle and still hit the rep target with whatever weight we're using. If you can do all those things and you don't actually die by the end of the set, okay, let's go ahead and bump up the weight until one of those things starts to fail. The more stimulus we can provide for the muscle, the better, but we don't have to lift as heavy as you possibly can. When you do that, you're going to take yourself out of the zone. You're not going to be feeling an exercise as much. You're just going to be focusing on brute force movement of the weight, which is useless. You know, it's good if you're powerlifting. You know, if you just want to deadlift as much as possible, squat as much as possible, that's great. If you're trying to grow your legs, grow your back, etc., less useful there. Heavy lifts do have a place in a bodybuilding program. I don't think they are a fundamental component of it, though. So that's something to consider. Another fundamental, proper nutrition and recovery. I'm kind of outside the scope of what we're talking about here, but nonetheless, when we talk about rooting your training in the fundamentals, that's certainly one of them. And kind of as I alluded to before, I want everybody to focus on how something feels. And don't worry so much about the numbers, like the weight that you're moving. Focus on feel, but still, those numbers, we want to track those things. Just because we can't be they're not completely inconsequential. The problem is most people think that they are the end-all and be-all of training, those poundages that you're moving, and they're not. They're very, very secondary, tertiary even. But nonetheless, we can track them. And if you put those numbers into your workout log, you can see what happens where you know, if we follow the guidelines before where we want all these certain things to happen during a set, you know, we want that mind-muscle connection, we want proper form, we want good range of motion. And then if we can do all that and still hit the rep target, we increase the weight. You might find yourself increasing something from 30 to 40 to 50 to 60 pounds over the course of four sets. And then if you look at those numbers in retrospect, you can say, okay, I got up to 60. That 30, that was probably a warm-up set. The 40 might have been a warm-up set too, and you just didn't really realize it at the time because you didn't see how high you were going to get. You didn't know what your potential was. So when you track that number, you can see, all right, I need to do a little bit more work in the upper end of this range the next time I come back around to this workout and try this exercise again. So, now, there are a lot of things that are exceptions to the rule. So let's talk about a few exceptional categories here. Things where... Well, I don't know if you can put all these under one umbrella, but they're things that definitely, they confuse people, and they give people the wrong idea of what to expect when it comes to bodybuilding. So the first thing is the new lifter, somebody who is unaccustomed to lifting, but yet they take to it really well. So like they understand very quickly, even though they're new, It's like they just kind of get it. It clicks and they understand the technique. They understand the focus. They get a good running start on that mind-muscle connection. They're going to grow like a weed right out of the gate. You know, it wouldn't be uncommon to see somebody put on between 5 and 20 pounds of muscle over a few months if they are brand new to this and really come out of the gate firing. That is not sustainable, of course. That's going to plateau. We call those newbie gains. But you see something like that happen, and you're like, man, well, what about me? And, you know, it's just, you know, it's a different situation. Somebody who is new like that, you know, they can just kind of walk into a gym and do pretty much anything, and they're going to grow, at least to some extent. The problem there is that when you do that, you can learn some really bad habits because you're still getting the results that you want, but you're not really learning to do things the proper way. So there is a danger there, and it's something that's worth watching for. If you find yourself in that situation, still learn to do things the right way. That's, you know, like I said at the beginning, bodybuilding is about the long haul. And part of that means reducing your risk of injury. And so if you learn, you know, bad form, bad habits, et cetera, you're going to put yourself at higher risk for injury. And that's just going to pull you out of the gym for more time down the road, which is not helpful, obviously. So learn the proper technique anyway. Another exception. So this will, I'm sure, ruffle some feathers. Genetic freaks. Those people are out there. And I don't care what anybody says, you know, they'll post something and they'll be like, this is all hard work. You know, this is my determination and my force of will that's built this physique. I'm like, yeah. And you've also got really good genetics. So, you know, chill out. I know you're a hard worker, but, you know, there's limits on where you can go with that and how far hard work is going to take you. So, kind of like the people who are new at the gym, those genetic freaks, they tend to either, you know, they just put on muscle easier than the average person, they just have a more aesthetic build overall, or they're more predisposed to being lean, or all three. And there's a special term for those people, and those people are called assholes. So it's okay to hate on them a little bit. They're used to it, so don't worry. If you're looking for somebody to watch or emulate and see what they do and see if you can apply it for yourself, be careful of those two categories. Somebody who's just starting out and learning some bad habits, having some success with it, but setting themselves up for, you know, a tough time down the road, or the genetic freaks who, you know, may have a great work ethic, but could probably look awesome even if their work ethic was a little questionable. So those people are out there for sure. And then the third exception would be the chemically enhanced bodybuilder, aka the steroid user. They are much more common than you might think. So it is not a fringe element in bodybuilding by any stretch of the imagination. It's difficult. You've got to be careful in trying to learn from somebody, and you know, here's the thing. Nobody's going to cop to it. I mean, very few people will cop to it just because, you know, there's a stigma associated with it. There's legality issues associated with it, et cetera. So there's always that question of like, well, is this guy natural? Is he on something? Blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Don't worry about it. But just consider that as something that as something to take into account when you're thinking about trying to, you know, lift some ideas or steal some elements of a program that somebody else is following. If you are in the chemically enhanced category, you're going to find that you can train with a higher amount of volume than a natural person and still probably see, you know, compounding gains. Your recovery is going to be faster, so you can train with greater intensity and frequency. And just so many elements of the program can change, and that affects dietary considerations as well. So just, it's something to be aware of and watch out for as much as anything else. So, if we're looking at hypertrophy, kind of like from a 30,000 foot view, so we want to look down, and I thought about this, I'm like, how can we simplify this? There's really two primary concepts, and they're kind of similar, but they're very different. They sound similar. The first concept is one of overload. And the second one is the concept of a progressive volume increase. So if we can find a way to combine the two of those things, kind of define them, wrap them up in a nice little package and put a bow on it, then that's going to help us create a training program that is maximally effective. It is efficient. It is going to give us the lowest potential risk of injury. It's going to give you the most bang for your buck. So let's talk about overload first. I learned this concept. I took a continuing ed seminar a handful of years back, and The guy who was teaching it kind of really broke it down in a really smart way that made a lot of sense. So what he did is he drew a circle and he drew a line right through the middle of it. And he said, this circle represents an individual muscle fiber. So the line that goes through the middle of it kind of cuts it in half. So we can view it as like a, you know, a glass half full or a glass half empty, that kind of thing. Let's say, and you know, arbitrarily what we're talking about here is, you know, I mean, roughly half, you know, that's probably a made up number, but your body needs to keep some amount of physical energy, some amount of exertional force in reserve. And that is very much an evolutionary concept. So think, you know, caveman Leroy is out there and he's minding his own business. He's digging a hole or whatever. Well, probably not. He doesn't have tools. Maybe with his hands, he's digging a hole. He's working his ass off to, I don't know, do something, whatever. But he's busting his ass. He's carrying rocks all over the place, whatever. And he is just absolutely wiped out. And suddenly a big ass saber-toothed tiger comes up on him and he's like, well, I worked myself to death. I can't run away from this tiger. So the evolutionary concept is that we have learned to keep some amount of energy, some amount of exertional force in reserve for those situations when we need it. Thanks, Dean. I see that comment. The idea being what we want to do is that reserve is there. We want to find a way to tap into it. So you're not going to get a muscle to grow and respond and change shape, change volume, if you don't push it beyond the boundaries with which it's comfortable. So that's one of the things that we have to learn how to do. So there is a story, and this may be, you know, apocryphal, it may be urban legend, but it exhilarates the example, it demonstrates the example very well. So there's this story, probably made up, but it makes... Okay, so this story is... you know, there's a kid playing in the driveway, there's a car, and the driveway's at a slope, the brake on the car fails or whatever, it starts rolling back, and it runs over the kid's foot, and it sticks there. His mom, who's like 115 pounds, comes running over, freaks out, lifts up the car, and flips it off the kid, in the process, breaking every bone in her body. So, the theory there is that in that moment of extreme duress, she was able to channel that reserve muscle to perform a specific task, even though it basically overloaded every other component of her body in the process. So what we're looking to do in the gym is probably a little less dramatic version of that, but nonetheless, we want to be able to channel some of that reserve. And, you know, if we've got that circle that represents the muscle fiber with a line halfway through it, and let's say the bottom half is the volume of muscle fiber that's commonly available for us to use, what we want to do is raise that line up so half turns into, you know, 55%, 60%, 65%. We want to use more and more of that potential muscle fiber. So the way to do that is... you know, it's got a, there's some tricks involved, but there's no easy way to do it. Basically, what you have to do is realize that you are a tough motherfucker and you're just going to do it, and it hurts, and you're just going to grind it out anyway, and we don't care how much it hurts. So the saying, no pain, no gain, yeah, that's what this applies to. So that feeling that you get, that lactic acid feeling, and it's actually the dissipation of hydrogen ions from within the muscle that causes that burning sensation. That feeling that you get, that's your body sending you a signal like, hey, chill out. You know what? You're done. Chill out. We need to keep some of this in reserve. So the more of that unpleasant, painful feeling you can push through, the more potential growth you are going to create. So you can identify a successful bodybuilder by their ability to push through that pain threshold and to ignore it and to shut it off to some degree. And it's tough. Like, I consider myself to be, you know, moderately okay with that. And it's something that every time I go to the gym, I'm trying to toughen up a little bit more and a little bit more and push through it. And I've got those days where I'm like, yes, I absolutely killed it. I shot past that barrier a lot farther than I did the last time. I feel really successful. It was great. And then I've got those days where I'm like, That was kind of middling. But you'll see those guys that are constantly crushing it. But you've got to maintain your, you know, quality form throughout. So ways to trick the body. I mean, you know, there's not really a pain-free or a discomfort-free way to do this. But the thing to do is, you know, kind of trick your body using techniques like drop sets, something like forced reps, partial reps, you know, manual assistance negatives. So imagine if you've got a workout partner with you, you're on the leg extension machine, you're going, you're having a great set. It's awesome. You're there towards the end. And then you're going to bring that, that bar up and you're going to hold it. And you're going to squeeze those quads and you're going to have your partner kind of push down on it and you're going to release the lock on your knee and just let those quads burn and stretch and just yell at you and scream at you and call you all kind of names while your partner pushes down on that thing. And then you're like, oh God, that was hell on earth. I'm going to die. And then your partner says, one more. You're like, no, please. And he's like, yes, one more. And so you kind of lift it up, but you can't really move it. So he helps. He lifts it up. You're able to lock out the knees a little bit. And then it already starts dropping a little bit. And maybe he's helping actually hold it up this time a little bit, just because he wants you to hold that isometric for a little bit longer. And then you hold it. You dig deep. You find a way to channel some of that reserve. You hold it. You hold it. And then he starts applying that pressure down again. And I tell you what, he's always going to win that game. But the more fight that you can dig for from within yourself, the more successful you're going to be. The more mentally tough you can be, the more opportunity there is for physical change. That's the big thing. So, but drop sets, you know, shortening up rest periods. You know, a rest period is designed to help a muscle recover. Well, you know, what if we don't necessarily want it to recover? What if we want to do our next state, our next set in a still semi-fatigued state? You know, if you can do that, and if you can still, you know, keep your form together and still come close to hitting your rep target and maintain that mind-muscle connection, but do it on less rest, that's more work that you've just done. So that's a good thing too. The three favorite words that I have for this, this should be a shirt, embrace the suck. That's my theory in a nutshell. You know what? If you're lifting correctly, it's going to suck and it's going to be painful. And if you can find a way to embrace that, God forbid, maybe even love it a little bit, you're going to go far. You're going to do well. So that's concept one, overload, finding a way to get the muscle to do more work than you want. One other thing that's worth noting on that before I move on, we tend to think, you know, bodybuilders tend to be fairly OCD people, kind of compartmentalized. You know, the ones that are successful, they're able to, you know, put things in boxes and do stuff and, you know, kind of get their brain in order. And they also tend to be very number focused. So they will look at a workout thing and it says, okay, well, I'm doing 4 sets of 10 and now I'm doing 3 sets of 10 and now I'm doing 2 sets of 15. And they treat those numbers as gospel. And what I would do, you know, someday I may do this, is go through all the workouts that I write up for people, and after every number, put ish, 15-ish, 10-ish. I don't care what the actual number is. That number exists to help kind of guide your weight selection. You know, if you can squat 300 pounds for 8 reps, if I tell you I want you to squat 20, you're probably not going to do 300 pounds. It's going to be less than that. So you'll be like, okay, let me drop that down a little bit. Let me see what I can do. So that number exists to kind of help guide your weight selection. The problem becomes our brains tend to be conditioned to certain expectations and certain outputs. So, if we say, I'm going to do 10 reps, I'm going to set this machine at 80 pounds and I'm going to bust out my 10 reps. Our default approach is to feel like we are failing at 10 reps, even if we aren't necessarily. You're just going to be like, okay, 9 and 10, and oh God, that set's over. Great. Whew, that was hard. Whereas if I was there, and if I was in front of your face, and if I was yelling at you, and maybe even getting you pissed off a little bit, you could probably do 10 more from there. And so finding a way to channel that as well is what it takes to create overload. So pull yourself out of that comfort space. And that's where workout logs come in helpful, because you can see what you've been doing historically, and you can slowly over time force yourself to do a little bit more. You can say, hey, I always come and I'd set this machine for the same weight. It's time to try and bump it up a little bit because I probably can and I haven't tried it, so I should at least try it. Pull yourself out of your comfort zone. You know, get those extra few reps. Those, you know, if you always stop at rep 10, if your target's 10, you always stop at 10. Almost invariably, I would bet you could probably get number 11, number 12, maybe number 13. So do that. Get those reps and then realize in your workout logs, hey, I overshot my rep target. I can dig deep. I can pull some of this stuff out of me. I can probably still hit my rep target even if I increase the weight. So try that approach. That's another way to generate overload. So the other concept, so we've got our two concepts here. The first is overload. The second is progressive volume increase. So when we look at, you know, we talk about volume increase, the first thing that comes to people's mind is longer workouts, which is not necessarily always the case. That is one component, but we've got to look at what creates volume. You know, how do we want to define volume? And it's not in a geometric sense, but in a workout sense, what creates volume? So I would define it as the total amount of muscular work that gets done. So work implying, you know, a force, or in this case, like a poundage, you know, you're generating the force, but you're moving a poundage over a distance and then over time. Or is that power? I'm forgetting my physics definitions here. I'm sure some engineer listening to this will probably correct me. So please save your breath. It's not that important. So, but time is another variable. Absolutely. So we've got the force that you're moving, the distance that you're moving it over, and time. So the force, the weight, is always the first thing that people go to. And I always, just to break those habits, encourage people to think of that last. So don't always assume, hey, I need to increase the weight. The first thing you need to think about is the distance. And really, I encourage everybody to record themselves and watch, because you won't necessarily know until you see it in video when you're not actually trying to perform the exercise. One of the reasons why I encourage all my clients to record video and send it to me is, I mean, so I can see it obviously and I can give them feedback, but also so they can see it for themselves, because they will notice things when they do that that they didn't notice that they were actually doing. I record a set of every exercise that I do in the gym every day. And I watch those back and I see things all the time like, wow, I didn't realize I was doing that. I've been doing this for 20 goddamn years and I still find that stuff all the time. So there are always things to find if you record yourself, watch back, study it. So distance is the first variable that you want to, this is an easy check. Basically what I'm talking about here is full range of motion. If you're doing half reps, partial reps, you're doing partial distance, you're doing less work. So get full range of motion. That should be the default. There are times during a bodybuilding program when you will want to break that rule, but you can only break a rule after you've been following it for a certain amount of time. So get used to performing everything as full range of motion. No partial reps, none of that crap, until you really have a good handle on what your body's capable of doing using full range of motion. So maximize that distance. That's the first thing. The time is the other thing. So this is one that I find is easiest to hold fairly steady, just because from a practical application, it's really hard to have variable time and actually keep track of it in your head. It's just, you know, it's not practical. By time, I'm talking about the tempo of a lift. So if a lift has four phases, a concentric, an eccentric, a squeeze, and a pause, then, you know, that's a lot of numbers to remember. That's a lot of tempos to remember for a given exercise. So a default tempo for everything starting out, if you're not following a specific tempo program, would be 1-1-1-1. A 1 second concentric, a 1 second squeeze, a 1 second negative, a 1 second pause between reps. And then once you get comfortable with that, the first thing I would do is take out the 1 second pause between reps and just make it a 1-1-1-0. So a 1 second concentric, 1 second squeeze, 1 second negative. And a second, in case you're not familiar with it, is this long. 1-1,000. That's a second. So I've seen people who, you know, I've said, I want a 4 second negative on this. And I see a video of it and it's a 1 second negative, but they counted out 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm like, that's not a second. I didn't say count to four. I said 4 seconds. Don't cheat those tempos. So time is a factor that influences the work that you do. So we want to make sure that time is accurately kept, you know, within reason. You don't have to bust out a stopwatch, but a second is a second, and it should always be a second. So if you're going to do a 1-1-1 tempo, just make sure that all of your ones are 1 second long, roughly. You'll get into a groove. You'll know what that feels like. You can tell if you're accelerating a little bit, and then just knock it off and slow down. So the, let's see, variables. So we have, yeah, I'm looking over my notes here. Other things that influence volume. So we've got the force that you're moving, the weight that you're moving, the distance, and the time. You know, time could also mean rest. So if you do the same amount of work, like let's say you do a workout in 60 minutes, and then the next time through, you do that exact same workout, you know, same amount of sets, same amount of reps, same weights for everything, same tempo and everything, but you cut down your rest in between sets, and now your 60-minute workout has turned into a 55-minute workout, you've done more work. So that is another way that you can effectively increase your volume. And that's something that people discount a lot. I think there's value in taking rest, but there's a limit on that. And if you can find those periods where you're going longer than 30, 45, 60 seconds rest between sets, chop those off. Get that out of there. It's not helpful. Unless you're going for, you know, really high weight movements, compound movements like heavy deadlifts, heavy squats, which, you know, is not the foundation of a program necessarily, but there is a place for it in there sometimes. If you're doing that, yes, longer rest periods can be appropriate. But typically we want to keep them shorter. And as I alluded to earlier, if you have the ability to do the same amount of work in less time and take less rest and come at the next set not as rested, still fatigued, and still do still put in a quality effort on that set, that's big. That's extra work. So we do like that. Other variables to consider would be the more obvious ones. So how many sets you're doing. If you're doing a 20-set workout and you come back and you add a few sets, as I like to tell people to do, you know, as they're coming through a workout split, like the second or third time through, add a few sets here and there. You know, let's change that from 3 sets to 4. Let's change that from 4 sets to 5. Especially if there are exercises where you're really feeling it, you're in a groove, they really feel productive, you've got a good mind-muscle connection with a particular movement, great, let's add an extra set there. That's a good raw volume increase. It's a way to force the body to do more work. We like that. Reps, you know, reps are closely tied with poundage. So I'm not going to tell people, okay, this week we did 8 reps. Next week we're gonna do 15, just because it eliminates a really easy frame of reference. But if the target is 8 reps, and like I said before, if you can get that 9th or 10th rep, do it. Absolutely. And then just know that maybe you can bump the weight up a little bit to get closer to the rep target. The other thing is the squeeze, and this kind of goes with tempo, but it is so valuable to add an isometric squeeze on every rep of every exercise. There are very few exercises where it's not appropriate, but boy, it is great. And basically what we're looking to do is make everything as hard as we possibly can. That's what bodybuilding is like when it comes to the physical side of things, is find out what makes something suck the most and then do that. What makes your body the least comfortable? That's basically what we're looking for. So adding in that isometric squeeze on every rep, like you're doing a bicep curl, you curl it up, squeeze, hard, release. Give yourself a full second on that squeeze. You're making the next rep harder. You do it on that rep, you're making the next rep harder. What this means is that you're getting more out of each rep rather than the last 3 or 4 reps being the ones that are really hard. Now they're all really hard. They all suck. You're doing more work. That's what we're looking for. So I always tell people, work smarter and harder, both. So let's see. Yeah, so there are certain things that you want to hold steady, typically. So the tempo is something that you want to hold steady. That isometric squeeze is something that you want to be really consistent with as well, just because the fewer variables and the fewer moving parts you have to play with, the easier it's going to be to reproduce the effort the next time around. So, and that's also why we keep logs, is because it makes it really easy to track volume. So If you go on my website, shameless plug, 5starphysique.com, scroll down a little bit. One of the more recent posts that I have up there is an example of how I log my workouts. And I like to stick with a set of workouts for a handful of weeks, perform them through several times, and just focus on progressing each time through and making it a little bit more intense each time. So the way that I log my workouts, I can put week one of my back day and week two and week three and week four all on the same page, so it's really easy to compare without having to flip through pages and try and find out what I did last time. So there's an example of that if you go on the website and find that blog post. So practical applications of these two concepts. So forcing muscular overload and forcing a progressive volume increase. So the first thing that I do is when it comes to Jeffrey Scott, thank you. Facebook Live comment, heading out to the gym in York, Pennsylvania. Awesome. Go kill it, man. Crush it. The practical applications here, what I would do and what I do with most of my clients is I will typically change out their workouts every 4 weeks or so. That's kind of the sweet spot that I've found for most people. I know a lot of coaches and trainers will want their clients to stick with a split longer, like 6 weeks, 8 weeks. I find that gets boring as shit. And I'm a guy, I mean, I like repetition. I like sameness. But God, if you want me to do the same set of workouts for 2 months, they better be the most amazing workouts I've ever seen in my life. And I can tell you, I can promise you, I'm still going to get sick of them after 2 months. So 4 weeks is kind of the sweet spot where, we can find a way to progress through 4 weeks worth of workouts and make them different and more challenging and more intense each time. Without getting sick of it. And then by then we can say, okay, this has kind of run its course a little bit, so let's swap it out. Let's pull out these new workouts. Let's plug in some new ones. So update that split every 4 to 8 weeks. I would err on the lower side of that. If you find yourself adjusting your workouts every week, every 2 weeks, stop it. That is one of the biggest things that holds people back is their inability to stick with a program, stick with a workout split, and allow it to progress. Do not lift intuitively unless you are a super, super, super experienced lifter and you know exactly what you're doing, in which case you're probably not listening to this. Do not change your workouts. Do not have workout ADD. Come up with a set of workouts and then own them for a month. Go through that split and just absolutely kill it and make it yours for a month. That's what you got to do. workout logs. Very critical. Like I just mentioned, track your poundages, track the sets that you do, make notes. I have all kinds of scribbling in my workout logs that will say, I'll spare you the physics lesson, but it's important to know what machine you're using. If there are several options for like a chest press machine in your gym, note which one it is. Excuse me. Note how much weight you're using. Make a note of the reps. Some workouts that I write in, I'll provide a range for the reps, like get 15 to 20, in which case I'll say, okay, well, I better write down how many I got within that range. If I say I'm looking for 10 reps, I won't write a rep number in for that set unless that's not 10. Track the poundages, make notes about how it felt. Like if you finish your fourth set and you work up to 25 pounds on a given exercise and you still feel good, make a little note and try higher next time, something like that. So those logs will help. Add volume progressively. If we're holding things steady, so don't adjust your tempos, but when you get a set of workouts, you write one for yourself, you grab a set offline, you get some from me. There will be tempos in there most likely, and oftentimes they'll be very consistent, like just slow and steady, 1-1-1-1. But sometimes they'll be a little crazier, 4 second negative, 5 second squeeze, stuff like that. Hold that. That stuff is part of the workout split and design. So keep that stuff steady as you progress from weeks 1 through 4, seek to intensify things in other ways. So, add those additional sets, increase poundage, if you can, as I've said a couple times here already, if you have the ability, if you've got that good mind-muscle connection, you've got good form, you're really feeling it, you're hitting the rep targets, and you if you think you have the ability to increase the weight without dying, do it. And then what you'll notice is as you log those things in your book, 20, 25, 30, 35 pounds, great. The next time through, chop off some of those lower numbers. Do more of those sets in the 30 to 35 pound range. that's a really easy thing to do. So the first time through a workout, you're basically establishing baselines. The second time through, you're going to compress those ranges of weights into the upper the upper end and maybe try and increase the maximum on a few of those as well. You can probably find a way to do that. And while you're at it, throw in an extra set here and there. I'm not talking like taking a 20-set workout and turn it into a 30-set workout, but a 20-set workout, add 3 or 4 sets. Yeah, absolutely. Why not? Another thing that you can do is work in isometrics between sets. And this goes towards the concept of not letting the muscle recover, keeping it fatigued, and then going again for another set while it's in that less recovered, more fatigued state. If you can do that, that's money. We like that. So I'll work isometrics in between sets early on, just because I'm early on in a workout, I'm trying to set the tone. I'm trying to maximize blood flow and get a killer pump on that first exercise. So working isometrics. So I'm doing a barbell curl in between sets. I'm just going to stand there, elbows at my side, and just flex the elbow, extend the elbow, flex the elbow, squeeze the bicep, extend the elbow. Working that kind of stuff in between your sets, especially early on, can be extremely valuable. So that's another thing that you can do. Adding in drop sets. This has more to do with just general programming, but supersets, of course, are a great way to intensify things. Forced reps, cheat reps, partial reps, those are all things that are a little bit more difficult to do and not something that I encourage a lot from beginners, people who are just starting out, people who are just trying to get into the groove of things. But nonetheless, they are options. They are things that you can add on down the road. as you're getting your feet wet in this, I think it's a lot more valuable to focus on the easier things like working in those isometric squeezes, making sure that your execution on the workouts is everything that it can be. You know, identify things that you're doing that make an exercise easier and stop it. Make everything as hard as it can be. Keep the muscle fatigued, keep the blood flow in there. And then, you know, just progressively increase volume, you know, just add a little bit here and there. Always push for those extra reps if you can. Those are the ones that really count. I think it was Arnold who has a quote attributed to him that I'm going to paraphrase and butcher right here. But he says, "I go until my muscle tells me to stop, and then I start counting my reps." And boy, truer words have never been spoken, because those reps are the money makers. Absolutely. So that's pretty much it, is it? Let me go through my outline here. Yeah, that's it. So awesome. That's all I got. So that's hypertrophy in a nutshell. If you can absorb that, if you can take some of that and turn that into something that you can generate a practical application for in the gym, I will feel like my job here has been done, and I will go to sleep happy tonight. So if you have questions, of course, fire away. Shoot me an email. If you go to my website, 5starphysique.com, there's a contact form there. Write me through there. Find me on Instagram. Send me a message. Find me on Facebook. You know, if you're watching this on Facebook Live, you know the site. It's facebook.com/5starphysique with 2 R's. On Instagram, it's 5starfit, again with 2 R's. But yeah, send me your questions, comments, thoughts, anything like that, ideas for future shows, whatever. So we're back in the groove here after a little bit of a hiatus, but this will continue to be a weekly thing going forward. So I appreciate everybody for listening. Everybody who tuned in on Facebook Live, it was good to have you here. Thank you for that. We'll maybe do this. Do this regularly going forward as well. So we'll see. It was a little scary for me. And of course, my dog had to act up and make things difficult as well. So we'll see what we can't fix in the editing room here. So thanks again for tuning in, everybody. I appreciate it. Have a great week. Go lift hard.